put you down for a while. Well, you know I can't quit you, babe. But I got to put you down for a while.
Hello, everyone. I'm Patrick Connor, and thanks for joining the Knuckles and Gloves podcast once again. It's another semi-solo episode with something a little special. I'm happy we're getting to put out more podcast episodes, though, but it's largely because there's just more boxing happening lately. That's precisely what this episode is about, actually, because if you're a boxing fan, you might have been overwhelmed by all the fights this past weekend. We had wins from Gervonta Davis, Naoya Inoue, Oleksandr Usyk, and Jaime Munguia in the big fights, plus a bunch of other stuff. It was great to just allow the boxing to wash over us for a weekend, I won't lie. That said, I managed to speak with former 130-pound champion Steve 2-pound Forbes recently. I figured, who better to give his view specifically of Gervonta Tank Davis' win over Leo Santa Cruz, since it was a fight at 130 pounds, but we talked for a while about this past weekend and the immediate future of 2-pound Sports and Entertainment, the Portland, Oregon-based boxing promotional company run by Steve and Christina Lunsman. Anyway, no more explaining. Here's our recent conversation. Let's call it 2 pounds, 2 cents.
How much of the boxing did you watch yesterday, man? There was so much.
I know. You know what? I watched the Inoue fight and, of course, Tank Davis and Santa Cruz. Watched really the highlights of Chisora and Usyk. So, I kind of see back and forth. I mean, it was real kind of sloppy, though, the heavyweight fight. But, yeah.
Did you wind up catching the Jaime Munguia fight from Friday?
Oh, I did. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did.
So who do you think walked away from this weekend with their stock going up the most?
Oh, Tank. I think Tank did. Even, you know, and Cruz and Santa Cruz did, too. I mean, he came to fight, man, and it was exciting. It was like I had it going into the fifth round. I had it 2-2. You know, I had 2 rounds apiece, and it looked like the direction was starting to go. I wanted to see how Tank would deal with the combinations of Santa Cruz, and also if Santa Cruz could take a shot. And I mean, and he took some good shots earlier, but you could just. Tanks, he has a different surge of power, man. I mean, that was impressive. I mean, you know, a lot of people say Santa Cruz is moving up, but Tank is a 130 pounder too. He's just growing, which, you know, but I was speechless seeing the effectiveness of the shot. You know, wow.
What did you think of that, Christina?
Well, we were watching the fight, and I was just getting ready to take a picture of Steve. He was so close to the TV, kind of like cheering both guys on, and I snapped a picture perfectly right when the knockout happened. So I didn't really get to see the knockout, but I did get a picture of Steve's reaction, and it was priceless. Yeah. But watching the recap, wow. He was not ready for that. Yeah. It dropped him, and I think that will be the KO of the year. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was so clean and just absolutely just brutal. So, Steve, you obviously with the nickname 2-pound, you know a little bit about weight. You got the nickname because you're everybody knows the story by now, but nonetheless, you know a little bit about weight, making weight, etc. Yeah. So I was a little bit, personally, I was looking forward to see what happened when Tank Davis got into the later rounds, if indeed he did have a tough time making weight and all that type of stuff, because that's been a little bit of the chatter with Gervonta Davis for a bit. But that being said, the impression I got for the last like round, maybe 2 rounds of that fight right before the knockout, was I kind of got the feeling like Gervonta Davis just got something in him that the way he was fighting was like as if he was kind of expressing that he didn't care what was coming back at him because he was really gunning for the knockout. And that the punch that he threw for the knockout was like he reached from the floor for that one.
You know what? That's what I was thinking, too. I was watching and I was like, man, because Leo Santa Cruz is one of those guys that once he gets going, you know, he's throwing over 100 punches around. He wasn't necessarily throwing 100 punches around early on, but I was waiting to see after four, five, six, because his volume was starting to go up. And I was like, oh man, he's taking some of Tank's shots, like, you know. But like you said, it's Tank Davis is what I saw. It was like a video game where you see this happen, and then all of a sudden there's this, you know, like Street Fighter, you know, that something out of nowhere where it's a Hail Mary shot, and it's, you know, his power is at supreme, you know, the beam is up high, you know, on a video game where you got a special gift. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, just out of nowhere like that. Boom. I mean, and that shot could have pretty much put anybody out. Super middleweight. I mean, it seemed that hard of a shot. He was out before he hit the ground. And it was a tough fight. I mean, for him to pull that out, you know, in the midst of, you know, getting hit back and forth, these guys was exchanging shots. I was pretty impressed. I mean, overall, I thought it was an excellent fight. I was curious to see what would happen later in the fight, but Tank was looking like because he kept throwing that uppercut all night. You know, you could see he was looking for that shot. And, man, to land it like that, I mean, that's what I'm pretty sure he was expecting that.
Well, the numbers still have to come in for the pay-per-view, obviously, so we don't really know exactly how successful everything was, but needless to say, it really captured social media for a few minutes. And what does that angle Tank Davis for in the semi-immediate future? I know it's tough to say with the pandemic and everything. You know, we don't really know exactly what's going to happen with boxing and live shows, but what kind of position does that put Tank Davis in?
Well, I think it's kind of following the Mayweather model. You have his biggest endorser, the person that endorses him the most, and the person that was a box office, you know, salesman and pay-per-view, you know, sold, you know, a lot of pay-per-views, and whenever he fights, he's going to generate a lot of, and that's Floyd Mayweather. So you got Floyd, you know, pumping Gervonta Davis up, really pushing for him. And so I think it opens up. And then seeing him able to deliver with power punches and, you know, being talked about like that, it's making people clamor to say, wait a minute, maybe Floyd, there's a special thing between him and this kid that we want to see. I think that's what they're trying to do. That's what it's looking like. I mean, Floyd is really high up on this guy. I mean, you know, you have Floyd high up on Adrian Broner at one time and all these other guys, but I've never seen Floyd like this about a guy, you know. So, like, you know, they're really, I mean, Gervonta Davis comes to the gym and Floyd will show him some stuff and watch him. I've never seen Floyd like that. So I think it kind of, it makes everyone else kind of say, wait a minute. I mean, Floyd was special as far as generating viewership. And then you got another type of guy that's a power guy. I mean, but Tank can box too. I've seen him in the gym spar with bigger guys and outbox him. But we don't get a chance to see that because he's icing guys out. So I think what it does is, even if you're not sold on him, it's gonna, I think he has a little bit of extra push with, you know, with Mayweather you know, endorsing him so much. And I mean, his fights are exciting. You know, I mean, there is some drama in it, and to see how they finish, I mean, it's good marketing. I mean, I think people love seeing knockouts. People love seeing a guy that can ice you out with any shot. I mean, that's why Tyson was such a big, you know, success. I mean, he was taking guys out, you know, whenever. I mean, even him coming back, is big. So you kind of got that feeling. I kind of got that feeling with Tank Davis, a guy that, you know, was a young kid, you know, grew up rough, and he's taking these guys out. You know, it's exciting for boxing.
I don't want to focus on the negative portion of anything that has to do with Gervonta Davis, especially in the aftermath of a really big win. But nonetheless, it is kind of part of his story, and especially with you, you know, partially at the helm of 2 Pound Sports, you guys have to wind up worrying about PR type of stuff too. So I will say, there was a focus on some of his negative PR and some of the bad stories, like his personal issues going into the fight. And afterward, one of the things that he did that obviously I wasn't the only person to notice, but I did notice, he immediately, when he got onto the mic, said, you know, that he thanked Leo Santa Cruz, that he was happy his dad was okay. And he repeated that message. He repeated it at the press conference. And so, I mean, I don't want to – that's fantastic. I think that it's great to hear a fighter say those things, first of all, so I don't want to downplay it. But at the same time, that kind of thing, I would have to imagine, really helps his image and his PR in the wake of a big win like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But for him to say that – I mean, how many fighters – I mean, a lot of times you get fighters – you know, they'll a fight like that, something like that will happen, and they'll be like, you know, I told you so, I'm the best, and all this type of stuff. And for him to be, you know, concerned more of different, like, hey, man, I really appreciate sharing the ring with you, and I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad your dad is okay, because, you know, dad's been going through some stuff. I think that was big of him, you know, him being a young man like that. And I do believe he meant that, you know. He's a kid, man. He's a kid, and I think what it looks like is he's really starting to understand that it's a privilege for him to be in this position, you know, especially from where he came from and the things he's been through. And hopefully he continues this more positive approach, because just like you, just like anybody, I've heard, you know, the stories and the rumors and the, you know, the past stuff of him getting into stuff, but it seemed like he's coming along, and I like that, because I want to see him inside the ring. I want to see him fighting. I want to see, you know, how far he can go. And I think we all do. I mean, there's a lot of attractive fights, especially in the lightweight division now. I mean, this is a fun time right now.
Well, and last question before we move on to Naoya Inoue, but as a former 130-pound champion yourself, I mean, what do you have to say about Tank Davis potentially moving up to lightweight? Do you have any sort of, you know, message to him or for him, you know, based on your experience being a former 130-pound champ? What is that leap from 130 to 135 like, for instance?
Well, it is... big difference with you know, weight, which is funny, because you could see a guy that's a huge puncher at a certain weight, and then he jumps up, not that big a puncher. But what I will say is, he can punch. That kid can punch. But I think it was Santa Cruz is not a lightweight, and you know, a lot of people didn't expect it to go certain rounds. I didn't know what was gonna happen. I expected a really good fight. I did think Gervonta Tank Davis would win, possibly late, you know, stoppage, but I was unsure. So him moving up, and I think Floyd and his team are doing it right, because they have him working on boxing a lot more too, because being, once he, you know, he's gonna be lightweight, those guys are bigger, you know, they may be able to take some of those shots, just like Yorkis Gamboa was able to take, you know, some of the shots until later in the fight. But he still has that explosive power. I would just say for him, keep doing what you're doing, man. I mean, you obviously, you know, he did show some glimpses that he could box. He looked, you know, real good as you know, using his jab, staying low, slipping and sliding. So, you know, I'm curious to see how far he goes, and I want to see him in some of the other matchups.
So the other big knockout of the weekend was from Naoya Inoue on ESPN. And that seemed to have obviously wasn't the pay-per-view that Gervonta Davis was headlining, but a lot of people seemed very, very excited about Inoue and his, I think, third fight in the U.S. or maybe second. In any event, he was very impressive against a guy maybe a lot of people didn't really know in Maloney, but who held his own and did fairly well for as long as he was around. It just seems like he can't stop Inoue.
Yeah. Inoue is he's a crafty guy, man, and he's like a, you know, he's a destroyer. You know, he has really good accuracy too with his punches, and he does little things, little short shots, short hooks, lead hooks, little short right hands. I mean, he got a good boxing IQ. I mean, most people consider him a banger. I don't consider him a banger. I consider him a kind of a boxer guy that can punch, you know. Very exciting. I love watching him fight. I like watching him study guys while he's in there. He's kind of seeing what he can do. I haven't really seen much of the smaller guys like that. I mean, like how he is with that. He has an explosive power, too, being a smaller guy. But, you know, he took care of business. He did exactly what, you know, he was supposed to do.
That right hand that he threw just came incredibly quick. And the way that he delivered it is like, it's crazy that he's bringing that kind of technique and speed up with him all the way to bantamweight. And I think it's fantastic that they're able to showcase an Asian fighter where, just speaking frankly, that is, you know, an ethnicity that just, there's not a lot of experience apart from Manny Pacquiao of an Asian fighter being successful in the U.S. or being anticipated or anything like that. And seems like he's been able to, at least in part, break through to reach a little bit of the audience there.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, Bob Arum is a smart guy, man. He's been around forever. And I love seeing a lot of the smaller guys. I mean, I remember, you know, back when the Carbajals and Chiquita Gonzalez and all those guys, man, they had some great fights. And then there was a time where you didn't really see the small guys too much. I mean, it did, but it wasn't like back then. I think now it's coming back where, you know, you can make some major fights with some of these small guys. And they're exciting, you know, the bantamweights and the flyweights. I mean, I think boxing is heading in a good spot. We're getting some good fights and good performances.
After a year where it obviously dried up and there's nothing anybody could really do about it, at the very least, we're getting a pretty strong close to 2020, it seems.
Yeah. I agree. And, you know, I just wanted to keep going, you know, 2021 hopefully is even better. And speaking, you know, and I, of course, I'm a promoter too, but I want to see some of the smaller guys, some guys with some experience that, you know, that's going to come and bring some excitement and come to fight. And hopefully we can get some of, you know, these good fights out, you know, our way. So that's something we really want to do, and we're actually excited for 2021, being that, you know, everything is well with the pandemic and stuff like that. I mean, I want to see some good fights, and want to push for guys to hopefully come here and fight too. So,
well, and guys and ladies as well. I mean, yes. I was gonna ask, you know, before we head out of here, we need to ask, I know you can't give away too much, number one, and number, because there's secrets, there's trade secrets in the up the 2 pound sleeve. But number two, I know that some of it's unknown with what's going on, but what you do know and what you can give away, what's going on with 2 pound in the nearby future? Do we know anything?
Well, we just, waiting for the governor, but we are, oh yeah, we still looking to have a female championship fight. Layla McCarter, of course, she's going to do a fight in next week. I think it's next week the 7th, November 7th. But yeah, we definitely want to bring, she's agreed to come back and fight. And so we'll get to see a female championship fight, being that everything goes well with her fight next week. Hopefully the first quarter of the next year. And we want to put on some, you know, we want to bring some other people here too. So, you know, fingers crossed that, you know, the governor okays us to get back to promoting.
We'll have to see if we can't, like, rent out a warehouse and then get, like, some, you know, socially distanced bleachers and do some production from there and just charge people on YouTube or something.
Yeah, well, no.
Got to be creative, you know?
Got to be creative. So, yeah. Yep.
Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about the fights and,
Yeah, no problem, and thank you. I love talking boxing, especially with you. Anytime.
All right, thanks so much.
All right, I'm sure you can tell by listening, but Steve is a nice guy. And as a former world champion, he clearly has insight into boxing happenings and behind-the-scenes things. Hopefully I'm able to hit Steve Forbes up and get more insight as live fights keep happening, and I can't wait to see what Steve and Christina are able to do in Portland boxing-wise in 2021. I did, however, want to talk a bit more about Usyk, Chisora, and Munguia Johnson. On DAZN, former cruiserweight champion Oleksandr Usyk defeated Derek Chisora by unanimous decision in 12 rounds over in London, and for just about anyone expecting a triumphant or emphatic win for Usyk, the result was a letdown or probably disappointment, and as my pal Corey Erdman noted on Boxing Scene, Usyk's performance might actually pose more questions than it really answers, but if he can't handle Chisora, who is a, frankly, mid-level heavyweight, usually sturdy and tough, but definitely strong, and, you know, look, he's someone most good fighters handle without too many problems, so why did Usyk appear to struggle? It's a fair question to ask, and personally, as Corey alluded to in his article, I think much of how Usyk looked had to do with Chisora's style and awkward rhythm, and the fact that Usyk likes to use his legs, likes to really work his feet, and Chisora didn't allow it. Sure, it wasn't pretty to watch for the most of the fight, but Chisora did what he was supposed to do in order to take Usyk's primary weapons, maneuverability, combination punching, setting those clever traps, to take those things away from him entirely. Usyk began finding ways to land the cleaner punches, and he adjusted as he could, but had Chisora won a thin decision, I'm not sure there would have been much cause for complaint. Still, a heavyweight like Anthony Joshua is considerably more lumbering and unsure of himself, and I think Usyk could have a better shot at defeating AJ than, say, Tyson Fury, who is a fucking rascal and everything, but a very well-schooled fighter who, when motivated, won't be easy to beat. Outside of those two and a handful of others, heavyweight becomes a wasteland quickly, though, and Usyk has a great shot at doing some damage. In the fight immediately preceding Usyk Chisora, George Kambosos Jr. won a split decision over Lee Selby in 12 rounds that the commentating team sure felt was a bit off. At least one scorecard was lame, that's for certain, though. Selby definitely had issues fighting a guy who he doesn't have a speed advantage over, so I didn't have much argument with the decision overall, but that being said, it was a close fight. It's difficult to score. A quick shout to the women on that fight card, though. Out of six fights on that card, three were all women's boxing, and if you ask me, they all brought the fire and showed why women should be showcased on bigger cards more. Rama Ali, Savannah Marshall, and Amy Timlin were all the A-sides of their fights, as it were, and while Timlin fought to a draw, you know, didn't come out victorious, their respective opponents, Ava Hubmeier, Hannah Rankin, and Carly Skelly, they meant business, and all of them forced all of the other fighters to either fight out of it or stay sharp to win or draw in the case of Timlin and Skelly, and it's appreciated. And while I know women's boxing is a taboo subject for some or something that brings out a lot of really fucking idiotic opinions in others, women's boxing should be highlighted more. Period. On Friday, Jaime Munguia continued his attempt at an assault on the middleweight division with a win over Turiano Johnson, whose lip got absolutely mangled by an uppercut, and he didn't answer the bell for round seven. First, I don't know who the ringside physician was for the fight at the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, but allowing Turiano Johnson to continue after closely inspecting his literally torn-in-half lip was gross negligence. That's insane. With a tear that big, he could have been looking at serious or irreparable nerve damage. Literally. The referee, the doctor, the coroner, all of these people are there to advocate for the fighter in one way or another. And in instances like these, they all fail the fighter. It's far too easy to get swept up in rhetoric about warriors and being a man and going out on shields, being willing to die, all that stuff. But what are those things worth if bad decision-making destroys a fighter's future after boxing? If they're injured so badly, doing normal jobs after retiring from boxing is impossible. Who's taking care of this fighter? I know they're questions that aren't cool to ask. They're buzzkills and everything, but we can't call for blood and gore and warrior or something or other and then ignore the hind end of it. Not if we're looking to be reasonable anyway. Look, all of that said, Jaime Munguia looked at least semi-perplexed by Johnson's decision to charge at him, and I'd be questioning how well Munguia can actually fight going backwards, whether his punching power leveled off a bit just a few pounds north of 154, but he also showed some development and improvement. That uppercut he landed to split Johnson's lip was a nice little move, for instance, and having Eric Morales in his corner, you know, it almost certainly won't hurt. He sounded like he's not sure he's ready for a Canelo Alvarez just yet, and I think that's the right call. He needs more time, more development, and he needs to demonstrate he can actually take some big punches and work through, get in trouble, you know, find his way out. Until then, he has good entertainment value, and I guess that's okay for now. And in that Friday DAZN co-feature, Elwin Soto kept his WBO junior flyweight title with a unanimous decision over Carlos Buitrago. One judge apparently only scored one round for Buitrago, which made zero sense since Buitrago appeared to outwork Soto in the middle rounds and at least snag a few, but it was academic. Soto's cleaner shots won out, but I hope he's ready to travel if he wants to unify. Now, I don't want to risk going on too long. I'd love to talk about every single little fight that I saw last weekend, but this has to end sooner rather than later. As I said earlier, thank you to Steve 2-Pound Forbes for taking the time to offer his view of a few fights last weekend, and I'd love to see more 2 pounds, 2 cents in the near future. In the meantime, if you're on Twitter, give us a follow. Follow my usual co-hosts, Aris Pina, at PunchZoneAris, A-R-I-S, and Bryn Jonathan Butler at Brynicio, B-R-I-N-I-C-I-O. But follow Steve 2-Pound Forbes at 2, the number 2, pound, that's L-B, Forbes, at 2-L-B, Forbes. And follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. If you're on Facebook, check out the Knuckles and Gloves main page and podcast page, and throw those a like. Whichever podcast app you're listening through, though, please subscribe and give us a rating on there. Thanks so much for listening, and take it easy. Oh, when you-